On this week's show, the creativity and technology dilemma with Josh Wayan from Suffolk Construction.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Jonathan Marsh, Dork sitting down to do some Contech Crew. Had a little fun with our boy Josh here. We'll introduce y'all to Jay Money in a minute. Jonathan, say hi, man.
I got to say, Jeff, I'm dying here in Erie, so I think I need to come and visit you where there's at least skiing to go with the cold, because all I've had is cold, man. I just feel like I've had since Thanksgiving, man. It's been cold.
Well, if you promise to bring the snow, you can come, because it has been, we had a big early year, but it has been dry, man. So had a little bit. So if you bring the snow and the cold, we'll show you what to do with it. And no, I'm not coming your way. So you're going to have to come this way.
Understood.
Josh, Jay Money, Wayan, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for sitting down on the show and joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
All right, we're going to get into this. But hey, guys, remember, we're back on YouTube. Check out youtube.com/@TheContechCrew. Smash that subscribe button in honor of Tanis, who brought us Josh today. So couldn't be with us on the episode, but we miss you. We'll see you on the other side.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring The Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
All right. So, Josh, this is all about the people, all about how did we get here. It's crazy that we all have these different backgrounds to get to this point. Give the listeners a little bit of background, what you do today, and sort of how you got here, man.
I am currently the director of emerging technologies at Suffolk Construction. What that means is, again, that I'm just focused on solving problems for my project team. So looking around corners, trying to identify what that next big thing is and how it's going to impact the day-to-day, my wonderful folks in the field. So part of it's looking at startups, part of it's looking at established companies, and then also part of it's working with our venture capital arm, Suffolk Technologies. And again, helping them identify startups, working with their Boost Accelerator program. And again, more importantly, trying to just approach construction technology a little bit differently. Instead of trying to find the next big thing or trying to find, again, what the next problem to solve for, I want to help projects and again, help them identify what the key things that they're looking to solve for, but also help companies and more specifically, help them identify what they're trying to solve for in a big way to be able to better impact themselves, better sell their product to other competitors out there, and be able to help the market as a whole. I think that, again, sometimes you can get too problem focused or too focused on what a company's looking for and not what the market's looking for at whole. So again, a big philosophy I have is giving back to the companies I work for and helping them grow and helping them expand and helping them address gaps in their product.
That's awesome, man. And usually those types of stories come with sort of some shared pains history in the industry. So tell me a little bit about how you got to the point of that empathy for those people in the field and those problems in the industry. Give us a little bit of an idea of your path.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, I actually started in the field. So before I even got into the field, I was a high schooler, and I really fell in love with software development. And I was like, man, this is great. I learned about Java. And I got really into object-oriented programming and, again, wanted to do that. And then the big barrier to entry with programming is that it requires you to be good at math. And so I quickly changed my career path and decided that instead I was going to do something like civil engineering, which would require less math. And you could start to see where my logic starts to fall off here, right? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so I was waiting tables one day at a little Mexican restaurant in North Dallas. And a gentleman who ended up being the CEO, a company by the name of Panado Construction, Teddy Panado, approached me and got him margaritas, had a made some fajitas for him at the table side. And he asked me what I wanted to do with my life. And I said I wanted to be a civil engineer. He laughed and told me no, and that he wants me to work in construction. And so that was the pivotal moment in my life. And so, you know, interned for 6 months. I was working in tilt wall construction. That's what they specialize in, and fell in love with it. And I wanted to make that my path. And I asked, hey, what should I do with that? And they said, well, you know, you need to get a degree in construction science and management and then come on right back. So I got a degree at Texas State for construction science and management. And while I was doing that, I was interning everywhere I possibly could. So I had internships at Balfour Beatty. I had internships at Argos, two at Austin Commercial, and I also was a facilities worker at Texas State. So I had a lot of exposure to the world. Again, while I was doing that at all these different companies, I started noticing that the same problems were existing. Things were still monotonous. Things were still dull, dirty, dangerous. And so when I finally, again, my senior year, I just got invited to work 30 hours at Austin Commercial. And again, I was in that day to day. I'll be the first to admit, I was kind of a hard employee to deal with because anytime someone asked me to do something, instead of just doing it, my status quo was to, what's the best way to do this, right? I still leaned back on that programming life that I lived. And instead of just trying to, again, do the same thing and do the clicks, I was like, there has to be a better way. So I started self-teaching myself a lot. And so the story I kind of lead with is that it started with me and Bluebeam and started tinkering around with all the tools. And anytime you've ever opened up Bluebeam, there's just menus upon menus and you can get really lost. And you start looking, oh my gosh, you can start embedding JavaScript in these PDF files. That's crazy. And you start looking at documentation. I start teaching myself JavaScript, which is a painful language, I'm sure we're all aware. And you get in there and you try to find a better way to do it. And then you start getting addicted to that. Once I found a better way to make my submittals and my submittal workflows quicker, it started getting addictive. I'm like, man, what else can I start impacting now? And so that was my journey down that path. And eventually I started getting more ingrained with the technology that my company wanted us to use and tried to find, again, ways that I could address, again, the day-to-day issues of a project engineer. Again, I started building up this reputation of a troublemaker in a lot of ways. Again, this tech forward troublemaker. And I will never forget that one day I was sitting at a very, very large project that I cannot talk about. And a vice president walked in and met with our BIM manager who ended up leaving. And he calls me into his office and he says, congrats, you are now the VDC engineer. And I think, all of us would be the first to admit that just being tech forward does not mean that you're, again, BIM competent. That's a whole different skill set and a whole different array of skills, right? Like it was just outrageous. But like a good Texas boy, I said, yes, sir. And I spent every minute of my free moment of my life learning about BIM. It was YouTube videos. It was like Revit and Navisworks and AutoCAD and Civil 3D documentation. It was learning about drone deploy. It was, again, immersing myself. I'm not joking. Like lunch, nights, weekends, YouTube videos in front of me. And I'm learning about, again, data models. And again, how 3D models and 4D and 5D and how they can apply. And what I started to realize is that there was so much depth. I know my first time ever seeing like a 5D model, I'm like, man, why don't we do this everywhere? And then you start to peel back those layers and you're like, oh my God, this is horrible. That's why we don't do it everywhere. Like the output's great. Everyone likes the output, but to get there, it's just a brutal, brutal slog. Right. So I started kind of just peeling back that, innovation in many ways was kind of like this facade. Again, get something to actually work. You had to drive buy-in. And again, get people on board. Hey, here's why I need the latest and greatest schedule. Here's why I need the latest and greatest model. Again, here's why I need the latest and greatest estimate or something like that. The other thing I started doing while I was on this project was getting into low code, no code, and getting into things like Power Apps, Power Automate, Power BI, and started teaching myself. And I started to realize that there's so much unbelievably powerful information trapped within the BIM model. And so I started, again, really delving into that, the I in BIM, which I think is the most underutilized in BIM, understanding, again, the information trapped inside the model. So I started pulling SQL3 Lite files of the actual model and then comparing that with, again, like a low-code, no-code app that I built to build out my own data model. So I inadvertently started teaching myself data. And at the same time, the coup de grace of, again, this story is whenever I decided to, again, find a way to automate a redundant task through the use of software. So again, there was at one point in time when I took the job, about 8 weeks of backlogged work. And it was all manual data entry. It was literally looking at a form and it was reading the numbers and it was typing them into Excel spreadsheets. So that way I could status in the model whether or not something was delivered. I was literally reading bills of lading. It was just brutal. I did it for one day and I was like, man, you cannot tell me that I got another eight weeks of this to look forward to. So again, leaning back on that programmer's creed, I went and I talked to one of my good friends and I said, hey, I want to develop a program. Yeah. Can you again walk me through what I need to do? So together we built a software that would allow us just to drag a form, specifically a upload form from Assemble Systems. Again, Assemble, now being bought by Autodesk, and drag it into one section and then drag the bill of lading into the other system. So we developed that software and then I worked with the vendor to get direct access to a SQL view of their delivery table. So that way I didn't have to deal with these bill of lading. So I had a digitized bill of lading and then I had, again, this Assemble upload form. And what it did was simply take those bills of lading, move it into the upload form and allow me to upload directly into Assemble. And what that did was that it means that in one moment, I just automated 8 weeks worth of work. And I was unbelievably ecstatic. And whenever that VP that talked to me earlier asked me about it, he didn't know how to respond. He's like, I've never in my ever heard anyone saying that they ran into an issue. So they just, got with the programmer, made a software to deal with it. And again, save 8 weeks worth of work. That he's just like, that's ludicrous. But what ended up happening was that I almost got fired because of that, right? I worked to build out an executable file and on a third-party software, in a third-party computer, bring it over to a first-party computer and run it, right? And so obviously that was dangerous. That was not good. So again, I really got this reputation of being a troublemaker and again, candidly, almost got fired. And so as I started, again, looking at all these other softwares, I started running into a lot of issues where I wanted to do things or from a permission standpoint, I didn't have the permission to do X, Y, and Z. Or again, I wanted to launch a software, but again, the company wouldn't let me or something like that. And I started realizing that if I wanted to do the things that I wanted to do, and again, make not only this company I was working for great, but also again, the folks in the field around me great, I needed to focus on how I could get create alignment and drive alignment with IT. Cause I viewed them as the barrier for me to be able to do all these things. Jeff, I know you're an IT guy. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just know that Jonathan and I have a similar history here. So like, I'm going to pause you for a second. I'll take the side here for a second. I'll just go to the side and John, you can think through some of the things that he just went through. I will say, I love the Bluebeam tinkering is the first thing. I think we should do a story about this at some point. How many of us started with Bluebeam? Because even I started with Bluebeam. Like my first ever article was Bluebeam, a digital gateway drug. Because yeah. Like I thought it was a PDF editor, and then they gave me the free review, and then they were like, "Well, we'll give you 7 days where it'll do this." And I'm like, "It'll do what? Ooh, I want that. Ooh, it'll do what? Oh, I want that." So you guys can go look it up.
Oh,
it's
Jeff.
Actually still out there on LinkedIn. But John, you go, man.
Yeah, so on the Bluebeam side, I figured out that your studio self-updated. So I had little Raspberry Pis as live dashboards. And I'm like, you on every one of the down in the shop and out on the job site, I had a way to go live with them because studio just happened to be live. And then my first video in Bluebeam, Josh, was how to lay out your Trimble points and load them into the Trimble with only a PDF and Bluebeam. That's what you're allowed, is a PDF and Bluebeam. And they didn't have all the tech that you have. It was a little handheld Nomad. So that was actually a trick. I love the fact that you started there. And it does, you do have that beautiful path of, being honestly the tinker and the creative person that doesn't want to do things two or three times. I'm not as jumpy as you. Like I usually do it once myself and then try to automate it, where you seem to go straight for automation. But I ran into the same problem as you, man. Like I actually asked to be CTO at Spader because I needed to get authority over IT so that I could set up some sandboxes. And I, this is why Jeff is laughing, is we first met, I argued that IT needed kicked out or needed to be my vassal as the CTO. Like I need to be able to control you because you're all too paranoid about having to do hard work. And yes, you're the troublemaker, but you're the troublemaker because you brought hard work to so many people that need to have solutions. I think that's the best troublemaker to have. But Jeff has forever messed with me about that idea that the CTO should control IT so that we can put construction tech in at a slightly faster rate. But I still believe in sandboxes and doing things safely, obviously.
Fail fast is such an important thing, right? I mean, you know, give us the sandbox, let's see what we need to do. But, you know, the reality is I see both sides of it, right? Like at the, when I was a BIM engineer and I was right? I mean, again, I just kind of view them as in my way, which again, I would never, ever say that to anyone in IT currently today. Again, I'm a big, big believer going through, you know, the bureaucratic process. If the bureaucratic process, again, for specific reason, is there risk? Is there concern? If there is, what due diligence can I do on my side to make it even easier for you to make that approval? And that's always been it needs to be both ways. It shouldn't entirely be on IT and it shouldn't entirely be on one party. The whole reason why I was actually bringing up IT is because again, I realized I had to work with them. I had to be nice with them. Again, we couldn't just be in the situation where I did, you know, all this crazy stuff and they were not in the know. That had to end, right? Because again, you know, we're talking about a multi-billion-dollar business. So what I ended up doing again to help get my IT tickets in faster was that I found out that a few IT team side played Dungeons and Dragons. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? You know, I'm going to teach myself whatever this game is. I don't know anything about it. You know, maybe I'll run a game for them or something like that. And so I ended up teaching myself again this game, which I never thought I would ever do because, again, I was always the sports person in high school, right? And despite loving video games, again, I always just viewed it as, oh, maybe it's just too nerdy for me. You know, it was so crazy. Whenever I started teaching myself to play this game, I'm like, okay, it's an imaginary world, but there's logic and systems and there's rules. I started to kind of really understand it. And I'm like, okay, so there's framework, but sometimes you can go out of that and started teaching myself a little bit more about it. And then I started actually playing it. And, first game was admittedly kind of fun and goofy. And I was like, why not? I'll give it another shot. And so I started, again, playing Dungeons and Dragons, unironically more, even though I was originally trying to do it with the intent of getting my IT tickets through faster. What I started to learn as I started to build this creative muscle was that it actually applies so much to what I was doing on a day-to-day basis, and I didn't realize it. And so I've never actually been an adventurer wearing heavy armor, you know, marching through the countryside, slaying goblins or something like that. I've never done that, believe it or not. And so again, for me to imagine myself actually doing that, what I was doing was putting myself in someone else's shoes. And so whenever I was looking at technology and I was looking at what's out there, and before I actually developed something, and again, complained that it didn't work, I instead started asking myself, you know, what would it take for me to use this if I was, again, that end user? What if I was that superintendent? What if I was that, again, project engineer? Let me imagine myself in their shoes. And again, imagine myself, behind the computer screen dealing with whatever I'm trying to deploy. And it just completely changed everything. It completely changed everything. So from trying to go to, again, smoothing through things over with IT, I in turn started, again, changing my perspective, imagining outcomes based on action, working on, again, problem solving, creating something from nothing, pulling inspiration from old sources to create something novel and new. Again, all the things that I learned through, again, this creative muscle expertise that, again, I hadn't done in years. I mean, the last time I imagined myself doing something like that, you know, it was probably like I was 8 and I had a BB gun and I pretend I was, an American soldier fighting in World War II France, you know? So again, for the first time in my adult life, I'm flexing that creative muscle. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful thing. But it made me realize, again, how important it is to look at things, again, and flex that creative muscle as a technologist. And so, skipping again, my history in data analytics and getting into business reporting and automation and to where I'm at now in emerging tech, what I see all the time is that there is so much nervousness and apprehension about what's going on in the market. I think that, again, the most important thing on everyone's mind right now are tariffs. You know, what would 25% tariffs on legitimately every single thing in a building do for me and my industry? Well, you know, spoiler alert, nothing good, right? Hopefully there's no one at home going, I am so excited that, you know, our livelihoods might be at risk. And if you are saying that, you know, please tell me why you're thinking that. Cause I need some additional intel. What I'm trying to say is again, like when you start to see again, these big industry problems start to swell up, whether it's again, you know, the housing market crash in the early 2000s or COVID or all the recessions we've been dealing with, or again, these tariffs, these things have spurred innovation. They have been triggers of innovation. Again, we saw BIM really, really take off after the housing crisis. People started going, okay, we have to find a way to be more tactical, stop dealing with these issues. Same thing with COVID. People started realizing, okay, we have to get out of spreadsheets. This is absolutely killing us, right? Digitization became much of a bigger thing. People started getting really concerned with logistics tools. And so again, what I'm trying to say is, again, these innovation cycles all happen because, again, moments of crisis. We are approaching another moment of crisis. Again, tariffs would be very, very detrimental to our industry, right? So what would be the next thing? And so I don't want everyone to just kind of fear every single time a news article pops up. But again, a big thing I always want to pressure people to do is whenever something new happens, and again, another development comes up, ask the question of like, how will this affect my industry? Again, imagine yourself in the future dealing with these types of things, and imagine yourself in those types of market conditions, you know, rising costs, material issues, you know, AI implications, and figure out how you're going to respond to that. And again, indecision oftentimes kills businesses.
It totally does. It does. I'm going to take you all the way back to the beginning, though. And John, this will show the geek side of me, but it actually wasn't me. Did you ever get to the point, Josh, where you used one of the Dungeons & Dragons tables? Because we have a similar how you make friends in IT, little behind the scenes. Like, I'm actually not the best IT person on the planet. Very far from it. I speak more business and I can argue with people like John and find a happy medium. Very similar. I had a buddy that I needed to create a better relationship with. And I actually covered him while he was printing paper from our big printer to lay out on his D&D table for his all weekend session of D&D. And I had to go there for a second. Did you ever get to the table?
So I'll take one from John. I have a Raspberry Pi that's sole purpose is a virtual tabletop for Dungeons and Dragons. So yeah,
there we go. See, mine was probably pre all of that. So yeah, had to be a little more old school. No, but I really love the imagination, Josh, and the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes is actually the strongest power in all of this. You know, as we're AECO industry, if, you know, an engineer can put themselves in an owner's shoes, if a trade contractor can put themselves in a GC's shoes, like, and just understand the problem from their perspective, they have an opportunity to help, you know, solve it. But the hardest part, and I'm interested in your career and how you've handled this, is there is this need for imagination and play, but that is like antithetical to our industry. We just don't do it. Like, that is considered a waste. And so how have you found the space to create it, you know, for yourself, but also now that you're, you know, part of a bigger team, allowing that space and creating that space for others in your group? Because that to me is one of the biggest barriers right now.
I would say for me, again, trying to find a way to facilitate that, it's hard. You know, like, again, back to that original example, I was a project engineer. It wasn't my role to be tinkering, but again, I still did. But I know I ended up working later hours to accommodate the tinkering aspect, right? So, but again, I would be nothing if it weren't for the people who believed in me along the way. If it weren't for that VP that said, you know, I believe in you, you can do this. And then, like, you know, back me up whenever I might get fired, right? That is unbelievable, right? I mean, again, it's the people who believe in the other people that are, again, like, making things happen. And the reason why I say that is because, again, for me and my team, like, our whole role now is looking at software and tinkering and trying to find a better way to do things. But again, not every, you know, company has the luxury of being an ENR top 23 company. So again, if you are like a smaller company, how do you find the time to do it? Well, I mean, again, you know, there's always time during the mornings, over lunch, again, in the afternoons where you can try to tinker and try to find a better way. And what I will say, and going back to the automation thing, you know, I would agree. I would never try to automate something first if there's a better way to do it with process. But in my mind, if it's something that's repeatable, and again, it's that dull thing, then that is 100% something you should be automating. And more importantly, if it is repeatable, then in essence, you know, you'll be able to save compound in time over time, right? So the earlier you can address the automation need, the more time savings you're going to get later down the line. So, you know, if you're on the bench and you're between jobs, now's the perfect time to address that one problem that's been irking you for quite some time, right?
That's the greatest thing. Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, I'm actually going to rewind you a little bit to, you were talking about, you know, people really having a worry about things like the tariffs. Tariffs are great because tariffs are definitely a black swan. We did not, you asked me a year ago if we were going to have tariffs, I would not have, I'd be like, what are you talking about? All right. So there's no way for a business to really combat that, sort of short of people like you, Joshua. Like, I mean, when you were talking about those people that you're empathizing with that are sitting at the desk and they're scared, all I was thinking the whole time is, well, they're not you though. You have a whole bunch of solutions that make your business, if you're in it, very much anti-fragile. You're not correcting and automating. You're correcting and automating on the fly at a cutting edge level. So it doesn't matter if next month it's not tariffs. Next month they decided that they're just not going to use concrete anymore. You're the person that company needs to survive. They don't need concrete anymore. So when you are looking around at all the people that you have that are working for you, what tells you that they're going to be the right person to do work with you, with your department, for your company?
Let's pretend again, like we're driving down the road. It's sunny. It's gorgeous. It's 70 degrees out. Hopefully y'all use Fahrenheit or else that wouldn't be too nice. And you're driving down the road, windows are down, you got a convertible, maybe the music's blasting. And all of a sudden you come up to a turn and it is impeccably dense fog. And what do? You probably slow down. You probably hit the brakes, probably turn off that music. You probably pull over to the side of the road. You probably put on your blinkers. Again, if you want to go forward, you have to, again, cast a vision through that fog. You have to provide a path. And more importantly, again, if you have people in that car with you, they have to buy in to your belief that you know where that road is. Again, a euphemism here for companies and corporations. But again, without vision, you can't really have direction, I will say. You need to be able to motivate the people around you that the direction that you want to head in and the solution that you see is the right solution. Your average man and woman in the field on board with something that would be radically different, because again, you view it as the path forward and you view it as a way through and out of this fog, will be is unbelievably important. Folks talk about visions all the time, but again, if you're not translating that vision, reminding people of that vision and making sure that they understand their part in that vision, it's useless. I have like no less than three places around me, several different cards and things and paraphernalia that tells me about Suffolk's vision as a corporation. They immerse myself in it. I am constantly surrounded by what the company's vision is for the next 3 years. And so again, I would encourage people to do the exact same thing. That fog in the road may be AI, and you're probably stuck on the road with your blinkers around AI and how you're going to approach AI and how you're going to deal with AI. Should we block it? Should we enable it? What's the process? But again, if you're not making a decision, again, you're stuck in that inaction piece, right? You're on the side of the road while everyone's blowing right past you. For me, it's all about, again, casting that vision, getting people to buy into that vision. I think that, you know, Peter Drucker says the greatest danger in times of turbulence is not the turbulence. It is to act with yesterday's logic. When you're in that fog, you have to approach it differently. We're in the AI world now. You cannot approach things the same way. With tariffs, you can't approach things the same way. Maybe we're going to have to start looking at, you know, a lot of substitution requests to get American, you know, materials in the market. You're going to have to fundamentally change the way you play the game in today's world. Things kind of feel cataclysmic almost every other week, it feels like.
The only reason that you end up in a foggy situation like that is because you're leading the pack. Just so you know, like everybody else is the second car behind you, and I just look at your taillights. That is my job, is to figure out who is the car that's going to get through that fog, and I'm going to follow your taillights through it. Because I do think you're right. I think there's definitely a necessity for casting vision. It sounds like you do a great job of that. But again, I think you're underselling the talent that, you know, I think a lot of companies that are smaller companies that can't afford innovation need to find people to look at to be the inspiration for that innovation within their company until they can bring someone in. I just loved your metaphor because I instantly thought, well, I'd look for a car that knows where it's going and follow it. that was my fastest way to get through the fog. But
well, Zay, that car could be going off a cliff, so you never know. That's why it's
It's the true. Vision guy can't see through the fog, so
don't worry. No worry. I love that, though. You did hit on a couple of things, too, Josh, that we see a lot of in the industry is analysis paralysis, right? We want to know the future, right? Like you said, I want to get through the fog. And to Jonathan's point, yeah, you could be driving off a cliff, but you also just can't sit there until the fog clears only to find out everybody else is gone because they did push on. And we do, and we don't know what's going to come around the corner, right? You got to set a vision. You got to set a plan. And then you got to be ready to change and adapt that plan because you just don't know what's going to come around the corner. I love the, you know, thanks to Jonathan, Anti-Fragile is one that we're all kind of around the dorks and the crew listening in on right now. And I think now more than ever is more critical because we don't know, you know, tariffs is one thing. John, you hit concrete, like who knows what's going to happen with materials and material access. And with shortages that we're going to see coming, whether it be people power or materials themselves, or just there's so much volatility. And now's the time for companies to think through that and do something. So for those, you know, people that are still, they're a little lost on the metaphor, they're a little lost, Josh, leave them with some thoughts to move forward to get through that fog.
There are a few different ways, right? I would say one thing is like, you know, you could, right, you know, take the backseat and again, follow the lights of the person in front of you. But I will say is that again, for me, you know, I don't want to like make it sound like I'm Ricky Bobby, but if all you do is follow number one, then you'll always be inherently number two. And so I don't think anyone actually actively wants to be number two. Sure, it's safe, but it's just not that fun. Right. But the other thing again, that's, you know, pretty important is that leadership's not a position. But if you look at, again, there's a book out there, The Leadership Challenge. They have done lots of polls on leadership and traits around leadership. They had said that in the out of all the leadership qualities that they look at, in the top five over the past four decades, inspiring and forward-looking were in the same top five year after year after year for the past four decades. What have we not experienced over the past four decades, if not rapid technology growth? And so what I would encourage folks to understand is that, you know, I didn't get into a leadership position. People believed in me. And so, again, if you can continue to inspire and get people on board with whatever vision you're trying to cast, then you are inherently a leader. And so I want to draw a fine line between, again, being that tinkerer and being that person who's just trying to, you know, have fun, you know, messing with Gaussian splats or whatever it could possibly be versus that person that's trying to get their company on board with whatever you're trying to do and your company on board with, again, what potential disruptions that you're tinkering with could provide. I feel like I see so many technologists kind of throw up their hands and they're like, well, you know, I ran into a roadblock with IT or risk or legal. And, you know, now I don't know where to go with this. You know, have you put themselves in their shoes and understood what their problems are? Have you actively work to get leaders in those departments on board with your vision or business leaders to help drive decision-making and again, help facilitate decision-making in those departments. Or again, you know, put some weight behind your idea or resources behind your idea. And again, I think that like, again, what's very, very important is again, getting people on board with visions, willing to commit time and resources towards what you're trying to do. Because if I tell everyone, okay, you know, here's the path forward. This technology is going to blow you away. And that's all I did. Nobody would listen to me, right? I am nothing if not a salesperson, right? I have to constantly get people on board with ideas. And again, commit time and resources to something that they view as an unknown. That is a lot of times what sales is, making people feel familiar with the unfamiliar. And so that's what, again, I'll encourage people to do is become leaders. Whether you not like it or not, it's uncomfortable. You don't have to be, you know, CTO. You can still be that tinkerer. But if you're not driving decision up the chain, then how are those leaders supposed to make decisions if they don't have all the information necessary to make them? So again, that's something I'll encourage people to do. Try to say, hey, do you mind if I spend like an hour a day doing R&D or tinkering or playing around with code? You know, ask those questions, right? If you're not setting aside time to do these things, they're just not going to happen. I think we're all resource constrained. You know, it's not like we can just wave a magic wand and make it happen.
Well, so, that's the interesting part, right? You hit on two things there that I'm going to use as a cool mic drop, you know, kind of drive it. To the tinkerers out there, you have to learn to tinker to scale. so that it can solve business problems. You have to learn the things Josh is talking about, where you have to articulate business problems and how these tools or automations or any new materials solve those problems, right? That's that set of skills that need to be built. And on the other side, on the leadership side, the true, like, I'm a CEO, I'm a vice president, I'm those things, you have to create space and time for those tinkerers to find those next ideas, to work on them. Because like you said, if it's not part of their job, not everybody's going to be a Josh and go home and work on these things at night. They're going to burn out. You want them to have that time at work because, oh, by the way, then it is a solution to a business problem. So there's a lot that needs to converge here from both sides. And it's a really cool time in the industry. I'm out there talking about this a lot. And so it's really cool that we got to do this here today. And I think if you're listening, depending on which side you're on, reach out to somebody to learn those skills, because there are people like Josh out there that have learned the hard way. And it, you know, the School of Hard Knocks is a good place to learn some things, but it's also nicer to be mentored and taught some things along the way. So, man, I just appreciate it. I hope people listening in, hope you connected with Josh as much as I did. Josh, thanks for sitting down for the interview and giving us sort of a look into the mind of a tinkerer.
Yeah, thank you. It was awesome to be here, John, Jeff. I appreciate y'all very much.
Mr. Marsh, thanks, man. It's always great to sit down with you and talk some tech and talk some contact.
Oh, yeah. And Josh, definitely, as much as you imagine being other people, imagine other people having to be you.
I'm sorry.
A lot of solutions, man. You got a lot of solutions. I think it's wonderful to have people that are willing to share, that are willing to do. I consider it tinkering with leadership, but doing the tinkering that gets you to understand the systems that are good leadership, that are how people need to understand a vision, how they need to even communicate around there. I think that's super important. Oh, man, thanks for learning D&D, because, you know,
yeah,
why not?
Hey, there you go. And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Joshua Wan. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.